G7, number 4A.
Well, we are on that way, going away from the past, having a bridge to the future, and trying to see how the future looks like. And this is a transitional stage which is felt all over the world. And therefore, especially in the understanding of Christian Science, we have to see that we undergo that transition willingly, not only willingly, but also consciously, so that we are conscious that there is a new paradigm in front of us, waiting for us, and that we really put everything we have into the balance for this period. A student just gave me a clipping from the New York Times. You know, the president of Czechoslovakia, Havel, if I pronounce it right in Czech, he was an author, a writer. He was under the communistic regime. He was in prison for a whole year for his writing. Then came the change, and soon afterwards, when you are in prison for a year, you become president of the state, you know. And he was over here, and he got some kind of a medal at the Independence Hall on July 4th. And in his speech, he says in the first paragraph the following, which I would like to read out to you, because it has so much to do with what we are doing. He said, "There are good reasons for suggesting that the modern age has ended. Material history comes to a close also, has ended. Many things indicate that we are going through a transitional period. When it seems that something is on the way out and something else is painfully being born." So let's see that we have a painless birth. If you understand obstetrics, we will have a painless birth. "It is as if something were crumbling, decaying, and exhausting itself." Don't you have that feeling? "While something else, still indistinct, were arising from the rubble." That's the beginning of his talk. And I think he expresses in a way, politically and internationally, what we feel we are doing this week, that we are leaving the old tracks and trying to find a new path and a new way that is going forward. So we begin to see that when we study Mrs. Eddy's writings, that we always have to see what she felt was right at a certain period, right at the period when she began, right at the period when Dorley was here, right at the period when we are right now here and are going forward into the next century. So in order to show another example that she makes that distinction, I want to quote again from Caution in the Truth some lines that show that she saw these forward steps already in her time, lifetime. I just quote out of the whole text so that I don't have to read the whole text, because that's always a bit annoying to listen to long, long sentences being quoted. But one thing she says, which we want to consider, she says, "Our present understanding." Present was 1888, that's when she wrote it, 1888-89, that's when Unity of Good was published. So she writes at that time, that's 100 and some years ago, she says, "Our present understanding is but the seed within itself, comma." Only up to here. our present understanding at that time is the seed in itself. What does the seed in itself do? It brings forth the same seed. That's the seed within itself. It is bringing it forth by itself. It's already a sense of self-organizing. It does it itself. We don't have to bring it forth. The seed has the seed in itself, but we know that it always brings forth the same old stuff. Since thousands of years, an oak tree brings forth an acorn, and the acorn brings forth an oak tree, and the oak tree brings forth an acorn, and the acorn brings forth an oak tree. That goes on since thousands and thousands of years. No paradigm shift. So she says, at present our understanding is just the seed in itself. It brings always forth the same stuff. Comma. For it is in divine science bearing fruit after its kind. So she says, what is necessary is not so the seed in itself, but divine science. That brings forth fruit after its kind. Then she goes on, sooner or later. Can you see again the time sense? Sooner or later, looking into the future, at some times in the future. Whereas she started out with our present. Now, at some time, sooner or later, the whole human race will learn that in proportion as the spotless selfhood of God, that's the point, the spotless selfhood of God, that's the one divine being. So I have to repeat. Sooner or later, the whole human race will learn that in proportion as the spotless selfhood of God is understood, human nature will be renovated. Now we come to a renovation. It's not the seed in itself alone. Will be renovated, and man will receive a higher. So therefore she considered that what she had at that time was lower, and that the future will bring a higher selfhood derived from God. She goes on further and says, the science of physical harmony. Of physical harmony. It doesn't say the science of spiritual harmony. It says the science of physical harmony as now, 1888, as now presented to the people in divine light, is radical enough to promote as forcible collisions of thought as the age has strength to bear. She said even what she was presenting at that time was strong enough so that people would chemicalize, that it would gave forcible collisions of thought. But that was only the science of physical harmony. Meaning what? The science of healing. That's the physical harmony. You heal the body, you heal the physical, and it stays the physical. It's still the physical. If we would give a real good treatment, which we can't yet, a real good treatment, the patient would disappear. Because he would be spiritual. Because man is spiritual. It's the idea of God. So at this time, we are not allowed to do that, or we will be imprisoned if we make patients disappear. But what is ascension? That's when the patient disappears. And so we have in the Bible various incidents that Enoch was walking with God, and he was no more. He disappeared. Thank God they didn't have a church at that time. Yeah, so that has already given enough collision of thought, and therefore we can see that if we go a step further and into a new paradigm shift, that we can expect that there is a crisis, or there can be crisis. That crisis can be within us because we resist the paradigm shift, then we go through a crisis. And then we say, oh, that Max, he is talking nonsense. That was the last class I attended with Max. or you can go forward and see that the forward step will lead us into quite a different realm. The world, she goes on further, is far from ready to assimilate such a grand and all-absorbing verity concerning the divine nature and character as is embraced in the theory of God's blindness to error and ignorance of sin. So she can see that what is coming in the future is God's blindness to error. Where God doesn't know error, where God doesn't know the mortals, where God doesn't know us as people, where God doesn't know an earth, where God doesn't know an organization, where God doesn't know a church. Yes, that's when God, that's God's blindness to error and ignorance of sin. That is, so to say, the model towards which we are working, that model of being. In that model of being, you can see there is no thought, God's blindness to error, God's ignorance of sin. There is only the capitalized terms, only the spiritual is real, only the spiritual is the reality of the cosmos. So that was the depiction at that time, 100 and some years ago. But even at that time, she was looking forward was giving a prophecy what would happen within the next 50 years. So she was prophesying to an age in which she was no more living, in which she was no more directing the thought, to an age in which she, as a leader and founder of Christian Science, could no more write to us and say, now, look here, people, now we make a further step, and that further step is so and so and so and so. So she could see that the idea of science would evolve by itself and bring to us a higher vision. That's why, so she said, the platoons of Christian Science are not yet thoroughly drilled in the planar manual of their spiritual armament. So she said, what is the reason why at her time, or at that time, 1888, why at that time we could not see further? She says, it is because the platoons of Christian Science, are not yet thoroughly drilled. I don't know if you know enough about military exercises. A platoon was in the former ages always usually a square of people, one standing next to another, a whole line, and in front also one to the next, so that there was not one chance to get into that platoon by the enemy. He couldn't enter that platoon. So that was a stronghold, a living stronghold, instead of a castle in the battle. They had those platoons and were in this way able to fight against every enemy. So, but it needed a lot of drilling. We know that because we were mercenaries, you know, over hundreds of years for foreign kings and popes and so on. So we know a little bit about platoons and the drilling of platoons. And so if they are not thoroughly drilled, the enemy can enter. But if the platoon is thoroughly drilled, the enemy has no chance to enter. So that's what she takes as a symbolism and says, if that platoon is thoroughly drilled, in what? In the planar manual. They had a manual, but not the church manual. They had a manual, they had their rules and laws how to behave in every situation, in the planar manual of their spiritual armament. Of their spiritual armament. Now, what does it mean if we are drilled in the spiritual armament? I would say if we are so drilled in the seven and the four, Then we have the spiritual armament, because that constitutes the whole of being. That are our root notions, or our weapons, so to say, against which the error has no chance to enter. So, now she goes on and said, now wait patiently, even patiently. Usually we don't have patience. We like to have it right in the next moment or next day. We like to understand everything right away. But it doesn't work that way. It needs a lot of patience, a lot of rethinking, pondering, thinking it over, praying it over, cherishing it, welcoming it. All that, those qualities are necessary for that patient period until revelation breaks into our consciousness. So wait patiently on the Lord, and in less than another 50 years, see, that's her prophecy, that will bring us up to the year round about 1938. Naturally, you can't always take that for a year exactly, but round about half a century. In less than another 50 years, his name will be magnified. His name will be magnified in the apprehension of this new subject. So she knew that there is a new subject waiting for us. That's the paradigm shift. That's the change in consciousness, and not only the expansion of consciousness, but the change in consciousness. Yes. So, as we know, really, that it that prophecy really was fulfilled. It was in those years, 37, 38, that John Dolly began to see the system of Christian Science, and began to teach the system of Christian Science, what he called the science of Christian Science, the system of Christian Science, where he began to teach the capitalized terms, and only the capitalized term constituting reality and constituting the one being. So there was that great turning point, which Mrs. Eddy somehow could foresee, and which brought in a completely new paradigm, a completely new view on the textbook. The textbook remained the same. The textbook didn't change one word, so it was the same, but the same was different. That's the mystery of a book that has been revealed by God. If you write books, you always can rewrite them and write them differently and so on. You can always change them. But when the book is a book of revelation, then it has something in it that is foreign to all other books, to all the millions and millions of other books. Namely, that the text remains the same and the meaning changes as time goes on. As understanding goes on, one sees in the same text something different. If we take what we have been discussing this morning, if we take the question of surface structure and deep structure, then you have it. The surface structure remains the same, the text remains the same. But you can look deeper into the text and find structure. Now, we know that 100 and more years that Christian Science textbook has been read by millions of people, always on the surface structure. They were investigate every word and every sentence, but the question really is, what is the deep structure? And that is something one cannot read. That's something one has to, what is the right term, to dig up, so to say, to go beneath the text and see something that is not spelled out in terms. You have seen that happening with the Bible. The Bible is the Bible. We haven't changed the Bible. Nobody has changed the Bible. But we read the Bible not in the surface structure as nice stories, as history or nice stories or in a literal way. we read the spiritual structure that lies deep down in the text. So that John Dolly could take a book of the Bible like Samuel and say, look here, Samuel, it's a long, 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 long story, a very long, long story, but I can put it down to a very small denominator. If you know your seven synonymous terms, then you can read it as 7 by 7, 49 points, 49 point of intersection, and you have the whole story of Samuel. So Samuel is not the story of Samuel and King David. It's our story. It's a story of a law. It's a story of a law which says, how is it possible that a very insignificant little boy, a shepherd boy, nobody knows him, how can he become king of Israel? That's the story. That's our story. That's the story I would like to be able to teach to the kids. They may not understand it yet, but the time will come they can understand that we can tell our kids, look here, you are a little baby. You can hardly speak, you can hardly walk yet, but you can become king of Israel. There is a law that says how you can have a high, great spiritual career. How you can make out of a little helpless baby the man of dominion, of the stature and measure of Christ Jesus. That's the law that is behind Samuel. That's a deep structure of it. And so with the textbook, we have seen that instead of reading the textbook with the lesson sermons, here a little bit, there a little bit, without any connection in between, without any order in between, how to read the textbook from first page to the last page and see the law that is ruling the whole textbook. The ordered law that brings thought right from the beginning, right from prayer, right up to the holy city, to the three levels of science. That's something to be considered. Yes? So that is what I really would like to do this week, you see, to find this law of science itself that can reveal itself to us and bring us forward from one paradigm to the next paradigm. Yes. Just a word from John Dorley, a little word from John Dorley's practice book where he says, I long to see the student's higher attainment in the line of light. Are we going to keep up with the advancing idea? We have got to go on all the time. The manna of yesterday won't do the job. You know, in Moses' time, the manna of yesterday stank. Huh? They couldn't eat it. Because it has the seed of eternity and infinity in it, everything that partakes of the nature of science has the seed of development in it. Not only the seed within itself, but the seed of development in it. So you must be on your toes, and you must go forward. The attempt to heal today on the basis that you healed yesterday is hopeless. It's hopeless. So again, we can see the question of healing must be revised within our consciousness so that we get away from the manna of yesterday, from the affirming and denying sense of practice, further and further and further up to the practice from the model of being, from that standpoint of the model of being. Yeah. Okay. I have another few minutes, and I want to read what a very close worker of Mrs. Eddy, and perhaps you know her from the history, Mrs. Annie Knott. She was one of the few who had the title of CSD. And she writes that Mrs. Eddy has said the following thing. The time might come, she said in a class, when medical thought might be so organized that it would make the practice of Christian Science almost impossible. The remedy, what is the remedy? That's quite interesting. The remedy given was not to count, not the counterpower of Christian Science churches, but when that time comes, I want my students to take every means possible to make science and health available to the whole world. Again, you can see that she could see two departments of interest in Christian Science and purpose in Christian Science. The one department is the Christian Healing Department, but the other one, when that is being outdated, so to say, by the improvement of medical science, then the time comes for the next department, namely to give science and health to the world. Why? Because science and health is not in the first place a healing book. Science and health is a book of science itself, where we see that the world is science. Until we see that, we shouldn't rest. We shouldn't rest. We should go on and on and on until we see that the whole world, no matter if we call it today, from a human material standpoint, a spiritual universe and a material universe and a psychological universe and an ecclesiastical universe, no matter if we, from the human standpoint, classify it that way, we must arrive at that point where we see the whole world, whatever it includes, as one world of Christian Science. That's quite a thing. And I feel that it will be possible this week to lead thought to that limit, to that line of demarcation where the thought can go over into that wide field where we see that Christian Science is the world. I don't promise you that I can show the whole picture because I don't know it yet, but I have touched the brim of it, and I think I'm able to convey it to you to some extent. Yes.